The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards with another edition of the Armchair Traveler from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And over the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the New York Times and the Washington Post. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that we might feature in the articles we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Have work, will travel. No, it's not a Western. But if it intrigues you, then you're going to enjoy what frugal traveler writer Karen Swartz has to share in her article in the July 3rd, 2019 issue of the New York Times. As the editor's preface, online job boards and gig economy apps have made it easier than ever to find temporary and short-term work in places you want to go. What in the world does all that mean? Well, let's find out. Tim Justice took a cross-country road trip and earned $2,000 along the way by making pickups and drop-offs for a delivery service. "I was itching to do a road trip," said Mr. Justice, age 41, a Phoenix-based flight attendant. "Forget getting on a plane if I don't have to." Mr. Justice's trip, which was funded by work he picked up on Roadie, an app that coordinates drivers and people or businesses looking to ship items, is just one example of how people with flexible day jobs and a little know-how can stretch their travel dollars by joining the gig economy. The proliferation of apps and websites that aim to link employers with temporary workers has only made things easier. Some jobs require specific skills, such as bartending at a music festival or teaching snowboarding, but other opportunities only require good timing. Mr. Justice had already done some deliveries for Roadie, so he kept an eye open for long-distance gigs. He jumped at one that offered $1,200 to transport a bonsai tree and a dozen other houseplants from Los Angeles to New York City. Then he found another he could tack on, delivering a vintage garden windmill from Akron, Ohio to Atlanta for $300. He got an unexpected $500 tip from the plant's owner when he delivered them healthy and 3 days ahead of schedule. Mr. Justice and an unemployed friend traveled 6,200 miles in a week doing tag-team driving. The money he made covered his cost, he said, and he had a great time on the open road with good company and good laughs. Well, here are some other ways for United States residents to mix work with travel without having to worry about a working visa for a foreign country. Well, we begin under the category of festivals and events. Music festivals and other temporary events need a lot of low-wage workers, and though you might spend a good part of your time tending bar or being a cashier, you can still take part. The Music Festival Wizard website offers a list of events, and you can check the individual festival sites for job postings if a location is appealing. Another good place to look is the Indeed.com job board, and that's Indeed.com, where a recent search for the word festival turned up an assortment of positions, including bartending at under the Big Sky Music Festival, which was held July 13th to 14th in Whitefish, Montana, $10 an hour. Now, applicants needed to have a Montana alcohol serving certificate, which could be obtained online. Now, workers were also needed for retail sales at the Music Fest in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, with dates for training and the event and teardown stretching from July 16th to August 18th, and the pay was not specified, and as scorekeepers for a two-day Lacrosse America tournaments near Chicago, which were held July 13th and 14th, and in Madison, Wisconsin, July 20th and 21st, and those jobs paid $10 an hour. Now, there was a two-day music festival in Butler, Ohio, that was offering $13 to $15 an hour for workers to move boxes, put on wristbands, handle crowd flow, and scan tickets and parking passes. The festival isn't named in the posting, but organizers of the EST Fest, which ran from August 2nd to the 3rd, confirmed the listing. For higher-paying positions at music festivals, arena events, fashion shows, and cruise ships, those with medical training might apply to Paradox Worldwide. Now, Emergency medical technicians, paramedics, nurses, and emergency room doctors need to be licensed in the same state as the event. They get an hourly wage and virtually all expenses are paid. The days can be long and partying on the job isn't allowed. But while the music festivals are super busy, sometimes you can be placed right in the pit. Alex Polak, Paradox founder and trained paramedic, said in a telephone interview from Pryor, Oklahoma, where he was working the Rocklahoma Festival. Now, under the child care and teaching category, many years ago, my friend and I applied to an agency to work as vacation nannies over winter break. I was placed with a family that stayed home. My friend, on the other hand, got to go on a family ski vacation in Val d'Isère in the French Alps. Susan McCloskey, owner of Nanny Poppins, you see what that last word sounds like Mary Poppins? Anyway, Nanny Poppins, a nationwide agency that places nannies with at least 3 years of experience, said opportunities to travel still exist. In general, the employee should get about $20 per hour, a travel bonus of $50 to $100 per day, and expenses, she said. The nanny should also negotiate for some time off. I would tell all nannies, do not do this on your own. Going through an agency gives you a level of protection, said Miss McCloskey, recalling the case of Catherine Ann Olson, a 24-year-old who was lured to her killer's house in a Minneapolis suburb through a fake Craigslist ad for a nanny. Skiers and snowboarders looking for a few weeks in the mountains can work as lift attendants, rental technicians, or ski instructors, especially during the busiest weeks of winter, when extra hands are needed for the holiday crowds. Most of the big ski resorts are pretty much always hiring. They are never at full employment, save Dave Bellin, a market research consultant for the Professional Ski Instructors of America and the American Association of Snowboard Instructors. Vail Resorts has a holiday help tab in its pull-down job menu. A job as a rental technician at Breckenridge Resort in Colorado has a minimum 10-day commitment, while teaching as a ski instructor at Colorado's Beaver Creek Resort requires at least 15 days of work during peak periods plus training days. We have some instructors that will come out and spend spring break with us and complete all 15 days of teaching during that period, said Greg Willis, the senior director of Beaver Creek's Skier Services. Now on to courier services. Sometimes businesses need an item ASAP, and so they turn to an air courier to get it hand-delivered. One company, Air Mule, pays $150 to travelers with a visa for China who are willing to sell a luggage slot on their flight there from the United States or on a flight to India, Thailand, or Korea that stops in China. Flights back to the United States pay $100. There are downsides, however. Couriers need to be at the airport up to 3 hours ahead of their flights, and they have to pay any baggage fees for the Air Mule luggage as well as their own. They also need to pay any duty that might be charged on the items they're carrying in advance. The company advertises it will reimburse any duty as long as the courier submits the paperwork. It's unclear what sort of support the company offers. Several calls weeks apart to the customer service number during advertised business hours only reached a voicemail. Sean Yang, the founder, responded to an email requesting comment saying he was traveling and didn't have time for an interview. Still, a few bloggers who have tried Air Mule have given it generally good reviews, though one did note that a certain amount of trust is involved. Another well-established air courier, Chapman Freeborn OBC, that's onboard carrier, addresses many of the Air Mule shortfalls, but it has its own limitations. OBC books and pays for an economy plane ticket, as well as any luggage fees. It also pays a daily sum to the courier, and it has customs brokers to help at the destination, though the process can still take many hours, said Mr. Nikolai Bergman, director of the OBC program. It's not for the casual traveler, however. The company chooses the destination and the flights and usually gives couriers only a few hours' notice of a job, and it's generally a quick out and back, even on international flights. You really need to be an aviation nerd. You need to love airports and flying in order to enjoy this kind of work, Bergman said. One perk, in addition to the pay, which he said would be in the three digits for a New York to London trip, the courier gets to keep the frequent flyer points. Were urban or rural, travelers who want to pick up some shifts and potentially meet locals might look to Wonolo, and that is Work Now Locally, spelled W-O-N-O-L-O, Wonolo. which offers access to on-demand jobs in and about a dozen cities in the United States to its app. Positions might include event staffing, brand ambassadors, catering, theme park work, sales and warehouse fulfillment, and among other things, brother. Now, job seekers download the app, then create a profile and answer questions related to location, which can be updated while on vacation, and preferred payment method. A background check is required before the user can start signing up for jobs, so initial approval can take a few days. Those willing to commit to at least a few weeks can find seasonal jobs at resorts and parks at CoolWorks, a website whose slogan is "Jobs in Great Places," quote-unquote. Current postings include jobs in Grand Canyon National Park, where Bright Angels Bicycles and Cafe needs a bike mechanic, shuttle van drivers, a barista, bike tour guides, and more through November 1st. An Alaskan adventure can be had with Allen Marine Tours, which runs day cruises in Juneau, Ketchikan, Sitka, and Glacier Bay through the fall. In Yellowstone National Park, some lodges are looking for people to work part-time for 5 weeks in September and through early October, so those jobs are obviously gone for now, but you can check them out next year. The low unemployment rate has created a very competitive work environment with a smaller pool of candidates interested in seasonal work, said Rick Hohenhausen, director of sales and marketing for the lodges, which are part of the Zantara Travel Collection. Several park properties, including the Lake Yellowstone Hotel and the Old Faithful Inn, are hiring people to work during the shoulder season after college students have returned to school as part of Zantara's Helping Hands program. It requires a minimum of 20 hours per week at a starting wage of $10.10 per hour for such duties as light housekeeping, kitchen prep, bussing tables, or washing dishes, usually for 4 to 8 hours per day. Employees live in the park in basic dorm rooms that generally have 2 or 3 people per room and shared or private baths. The cost of the accommodation and cafeteria-style meals are subsidized based on hours worked, but typically average about $45 per week. Participants also receive complimentary uniforms, laundry, parking, a park entrance pass, and free park tours when space is available. Erica Brown, age 62, a retired dental hygienist from Atlanta, worked last year at Yellowstone's Lake Lodge Cabins and the Lake Yellowstone Hotel. She said some of the jobs were physically demanding, but she loved getting to meet people from around the world and having a chance to photograph the scenery and wildlife. The best part was the opportunity to live in one of the world's most amazing places for 5 weeks, she said. So there you go. And that's written by Karen Schwartz, and you can follow her on Twitter. Her Twitter handle is at WonderWomanIsMe, at WonderWomanIsMe on Twitter. Well, Erin E. Williams shares an out-of-this-world experience in her article, In the Central Oregon Desert, an Observatory with Out-of-This-World Views. This is from the September 13, 2019 issue of the Washington Post. Our gazes first met at a party from across a crowded galaxy. I gaped at an object of impossible beauty, seemingly bedecked with diamonds. It stared back at me, and the 34,000 light-year distance between us disappeared. Starstruck, I couldn't tear my eyes away. The object of my attraction was Messier 3, one of the night sky's biggest and brightest globular star clusters, and the party was Astronomy Day, held on May 11th and October 5th of this year. I was celebrating at the Oregon Observatory at Sun River, which houses about 30 telescopes and the country's largest facility for public viewing. The nonprofit Oregon Observatory is dedicated to providing public access to the heavens. Unlike most research observatories where visitors admire telescopes from afar, it encourages aspiring astronomers to get an eyeful through its scopes, typically 12 to 15 on a given night. Celestial bodies are the stars of the show, and they're easy to spot thanks to clear air and the darkness. Sun River, the surrounding resort town, has a stringent lighting ordinance that protects the night sky from light pollution. We want people to look through the eyepieces, said observatory manager Robert Grossfeld, who has worked at the site since it opened in 1990. public access to such an array of telescopes is unusual. We have a diverse collection, and because different telescopes do different things, well, people can view a wide range of objects in the sky, he noted. Planetary viewing is often a highlight, since visitors can recognize details such as Jupiter's moons and Saturn's rings. But spring and fall are prime times for globular clusters, that's dense collections of ancient stars, especially on nights when bright moonlight might drown out the planets. The observatory also offers daily solar viewing through two special telescopes that allow visitors to safely watch hydrogen storms and sunspots. Looking directly at the sun is a unique experience, Grossfeld said. The sun changes every day and every hour. Telescopes give us the opportunity to show people what a star truly looks like, and since our sun is the only star where you can see detail. For the biannual star party, I had driven a half hour from downtown Bend, arriving for my springtime visit at 9 p.m. Frogs croaked in the fading twilight, which painted the surrounding Central Oregon high desert pastel. I followed a trail of red lights. The color helped our eyes remain adjusted to the darkness. To the two-story observatory dome, through a starport with a roll-off roof, and, finally, to a star deck outside. In these areas, 14 telescopes pointed at different astronomical marvels. A couple of dozen adults and children were already waiting for their chance to peek into the cosmos. A few fervent amateur astronomers had set up their own telescopes, and newbies shared their galaxy-sized enthusiasm. "This is awesome," a man said as he gestured at the scattered scopes. "Look at that. There are even more telescopes over there. This is going to be awesome." I stepped onto a ladder and squinted into the first eyepiece. A silver smudge hovered in the darkness. I was looking at the Great Cluster in Hercules, a globular star cluster with about 300,000 stars. As my sight adjusted, shapes emerged, subtle whorls that resembled a pinwheel twirling through countless pinpricks of light. Paul Ponce, the observatory's program facility lead, oriented a 12.5-inch telescope toward the waxing crescent moon. Its craters were so textured, their nubby indentations appeared within arm's reach. While we waited for the sky to darken, Ponce gave a talk on Mars in an outdoor amphitheater. In the summer, the observatory rotates several presentations that focus on planets, the solar system, and constellations. The project screen lacked the telescope's first-person flair, but Ponce still impressed the audience with descriptions of Olympus Mons, the solar system's largest known volcano, its 2.5 times the height of Mount Everest, and Valles Marianas, a canyon that covers the distance from Oregon to New York. When I returned to the star deck, the temperature had dipped into the 40s. I was grateful for my cool weather gear and for the off-season. Up to 300 people might visit on a July or August night, but on this May evening, only 100 visitors craned their neck to the sky and tilted their ears to a dozen staffers and volunteers who were describing the sights. Fall and winter nights are similarly uncrowded. "We call the dim stuff faint fizzies," said a volunteer as he took a break from answering a little girl's astute questions about triple star systems. "The longer you look, the more depth, patterns, and colors and shapes." He was right. Examining the planetary Cat's Eye Nebula nestled in the Draco constellation, I waited for its details to emerge. The complex dust and gas cloud rewarded my patience with a subtle green and blue glimmer. After a few moments, I discerned the fuzzy white dwarf, a dying star in its center. I rubbernecked through the telescope after telescope. In one, I peeked at Arcturus, a red giant star, another, the Sombrero Galaxy, whose center probably contains a gigantic black hole, and a third, a flash of silver streaked across my field of vision, a shooting star. Finally, I blinked into an eyepiece, a glittering Messier 3. "It's nearly 500,000 stars are among the oldest in the universe, about 8 to 11 billion years old," explained a volunteer. "Given that the universe is about 14 billion years old, there's some pretty old stars." I blinked again, trying to absorb quantities that stretched into endless space and shifted my perspective outward from our little planet. Don Barnes, a volunteer since the observatory's beginning, led visitors on a constellation tour without leaving the ground. He pointed a red laser into the heavens, where familiar figures cavorted, Ursa Major, Cassiopeia, and Polaris. But with his guidance, new forms came alive. Draco the Dragon glazed near Cygnus, the Swan in the north. Gemini, Leo, Corvus, Virgo, and Lyra winked hello. Grossfeld told me that these tours are an important part of the program since they allow visitors to appreciate the night sky with their naked eyes. The number one thing that we try to give people is a sense of wonder and awe, he added. You don't even need a telescope for that. I was one of the last to leave at 11 o'clock, lingering at a 20-inch research-grade telescope for one final look at Messier 3. It would take the fastest spacecraft we've ever built a half billion years to get there, Ponce said. Over 2 hours, I had journeyed across the universe, but the observatory was closing, and I needed to return to Earth. Wow. Lots of fun there. And by the way, the Oregon Observatory at Sun River is located at 57245 River Road in Sun River. And they're online if you'd like to check them out at snco.org. That's snco.org. Solar viewing time is daily from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Summer night sky viewing time is Tuesday through Sunday from 9 to 11 p.m. And beginning October the 27th, fall and winter nighttime viewing is two nights per week. And you can check their website again. That's snco.org for dates and times. Admission $7 for adults, $5 for children for solar viewing, and $10 for adults, $8 for children for nighttime viewing. And no reservations are accepted. So quite an interesting little trip there that like to see the night skies as part of your traveling. Well, in our final stop on today's Armchair Traveler, writer Michael Hingston, takes us on a tour of bookstores. Now, his article, In London, It's Easy to Find a Bookstore That Floats Your Boat. Really, one is on a barge. This is from the September 13, 2019 issue of the Washington Post. The first time I went to London, I asked a friend who lived there for a bookstore recommendations. Well, he said with a pause, that depends. What kind? I was too embarrassed to admit I didn't realize I had to specify. But given that I was in the center of the English-speaking literary world, it was entirely a reasonable question. That sense of overload returned immediately on a recent trip back to the city, but this time I was better prepared for the depth and breadth of London's literary marketplace. Looking for a first edition of Brideshead Revisited? No problem. How about a medieval map? You can find that, too. Want to pick up a stack of recent paperbacks from inside a boat? Well, step right this way. Also, mind your head. No matter your interest or your budget, London has a bookshop for you. Let's take a look at some of these. Daunt Books, located a short walk from Baker Street Tube Station, the original branch of this travel-focused chain, greets you with an impeccably chosen selection of new fiction and nonfiction, including the most recent offerings from its publishing arm, Daunt Books Publishing. But the real allure is at the back. That's where the store opens up into three full stories of books, organized not by genre but by country, including Javier Marias' novel, sit usually comfortably alongside Lonely Planet Spain. With wooden banisters, skylights, and all-around Edwardian charm, it's also one of the most photogenic bookshops in the city. And you can find them in London at 83 Marylebone High Street. Online, it's dauntbooks.co.uk. That's dauntbooks.co.uk. Next up is Any Amount of Books. That's an interesting name, isn't it? If I had to name a used bookstore, that would appeal to anyone. The first place that comes to mind is Any Amount of Books. And this shop is one of the few remaining on the Booksellers Row, immortalized in Helen Hoff's 1970 novel, 84 Charing Cross Road. That address is now a McDonald's, and it's a winning jumble of genres, formats, and price points. Big game hunters can browse the store's antiquarian titles, while those looking for quantity will be drawn to the eclectic and constantly updated sales rack out front. Most shoppers, however, will be happy to browse the walls of general interest titles inside, but if you have something else to do that day, you might want to set a timer lest you accidentally spend all day there. You'll find them in London at 56 Charing Cross Road. Online, they're at anyamountofbooks.com. That's anyamountofbooks.com. Then we have Foyles, this London institution, once infamous for its maddeningly archaic business practices. Titles were barely organized, and there were no cash registers. Has in recent years reinvented itself as a thoroughly modern bookselling chain. Nowhere is that newfound sleekness more on display than the five-story flagship shop on Charing Cross Road. It's thoroughly stocked, clearly and intuitively organized, and even has a dedicated cafe on the top floor, which is perhaps why the new incarnation also feels a bit lacking in personality. More adventurous book lovers will want to get their kicks elsewhere, but if you need to grab a self-help book with an expletive in the title or a good grammar is sexy tote bag, Foyles is undoubtedly the place to go. They're at 107 Charing Cross Road. Online, check them out at foyles.co.uk/bookstore-charing-cross. That's foyles.co.uk/bookstore-charing-cross. Peter Ellis, bookseller, is our next stop. Did you know that in the Harry Potter universe, or Potterverse is how they say it, the magical Diagon Alley is accessed via an abandoned-looking pub just off Charing Cross Road? Well, the booksellers of the real-life Cecil Court do, if only because the alleyway in front of their shops is frequently clogged with tour groups learning that fact via megaphone. Once you weave your way through, however, an excellent assortment of cozy higher-end bookshops awaits, including Peter Ellis, an old-school antiquarian bookseller who specializes in modern first editions. If your favorite book was published in the 20th century, here's the place to treat yourself to that pristine copy you've always dreamed of. You'll find them at 18 Cecil Court and online at peterellisbooks.com. peterellisbooks.com. Gosh Comics. Wow, it's a fitting that there's a bat signal in front of Gosh, as comics fans from all over the city will find themselves drawn to a graphic novel selection that shows off just about everything the medium has to offer. The shop's aesthetic is spare and understated, but the stock is not. Each table and bookcase piled with titles of all sizes, formats, and colors. You'll find the traditional superhero fare here, including key creator sections for luminaries such as Alan Moore and Neil Gaiman. Also, a large selection of children's comics, an entire wall of indie and small press titles, and a general fiction section. The latter yet another compelling argument that the genre has long transcended the funny pages. And some other places to check out, too, and we'll have to quickly go through these as we're running out of time. We have Persephone Books, which does double duty not only as a charming retail outlet, but also as the office space for the publisher of the same name. They're at 59 Lamb's Conduit Street, persephonebooks.co.uk, Persephone, P-E-R-S-E-P-H-O-N-E, persephonebooks.co.uk. Next up is the Gaze the Word. While North Americans are often familiar with Charing Cross's literary reputation, the nearby districts of Bloomsbury and St. Pancras are home to their own excellent cluster of bookshops, and you start here at Britain's oldest LGBT plus bookstore, which has been around since 1979. And they're found at 66 Marchmont Street and online at gazetheword.co.uk. Then we have Scoob Books, just around the corner from Gaze the Word. It's a staircase down to Scoob, an underground treasure trove of more than 50,000 secondhand titles at hard-to-beat prices. And finally, Word on the Water. It might sound like a gimmick, and the ambiance of Regent's Canal certainly doesn't hurt, but this floating century-old Dutch barge is a legitimate, yes, legitimate secondhand bookshop. Its stocks ranges from classics to photography to contemporary fiction, and the farther inside you venture, the snuggier it gets. When you reach the children's section on the lowest level, you'll find the L-shaped couch that attracts patrons and the bookshop dog alike. So, book lovers, there you go. Lots of choices to go to in London, and lots of fun awaits. So, well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed your crazy journey today. A little bit of a eclectic list, but I'm Mike Edwards, and I've enjoyed reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Hope you join us next week. Content of our program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions may be directed to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.